This is not an attempt to ban TikTok. It's an attempt to make TikTok better. Tic-tac-toe, a winner.
Oh, brother, this guy stinks!
Welcome to Move Left Idiots, a socialist talk podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Monterullo, joined here by my co-host, Comrade Dracula. Comrade, what's happening?
Oh, man, it has been a minute. We haven't been on the air here for, I think it was just before the Oscars. So you must be working very hard down at the artificial plant.
The coal mine, yeah.
So I remember we were... I don't even know what we talked about last show, but I'm sure Israel was in there because we're still doing a genocide, apparently. Yep. But just after we recorded, the Oscars happened, and Zone of Interest, movie about the Holocaust, won for, what did it win? I forget.
I want to say adapted screenplay. I'll double check that, but
keep going. So Jonathan Glazer, the director who directed some amazing films, Under the Skin with Scarlett Johansson, is one of my favorite like horror sci-fi, you know, shoegazer indie films of all time. You can watch it over and over and over again. It's like I started listening to the soundtrack of that film before I'd even seen the film, and the soundtrack itself is fucking terrifying. It's like one of the most haunting soundtracks I've ever heard before. And the film is about this family. The family of the commandant who runs the concentration camp, who live right outside the wall of the concentration camp, right? And how mundane their lives are, you know, the banality of evil, how used to this they are, that, like, nothing bothers them about it. Like, this is just, like, she's got her garden, and she's happy, and he's, you know, his career is on the uptick, you know, killing millions of people, so he's happy. Their dog's running around, just, you know, being a dog, you know, whatever. And the whole time, though, you don't see any of the Holocaust, but you hear it. It's just right over the other side of the wall, and you hear the sound of, like, engine, you know, like, furnaces burning bodies. You hear the sounds of trains showing up with more people. You hear, you know, every once in a while, just, like, random screaming and gunshots, right? So the whole time you're hearing this symphony of death, but you never see it. And that's the whole point of the film is, you know, this could be any one of us. And how do we get complacent with, you know, a genocide happening on the other side of the world or on the other side of a wall, and we just normalize it to the point where you don't even, you know, flinch when you hear screams and gunshots and gas chambers and shit. And that was, you know, obviously extremely intentional on the part of the filmmakers to have you only hear it. Right.
What does to what? Does that have some sort of modern allegorical connection that you're
right
making? Because I don't see it, you know, personally. But
so Glazer gets up there in his speech and he talks about what's happening now with Israel committing genocide in Gaza. He doesn't call it genocide, but we all know that that's what it is. And people flipped out, and immediately they were circulating petitions to, you know, all this shit. And it's like, if you've seen the film and you didn't get that was the point, to connect the past with the present. I mean, there's a scene in the film where it jumps from, you know, 1944 or 45 to the present, to the actual Holocaust Museum, and then it cuts back to 1945, and it's like this very surreal moment, and you don't understand that, like, so anyway, it was, and then you have like right wingers who didn't even watch the movie. Say, there's no Jew. Ben Shapiro was like, there's no Jews in the movie. They don't even show any Jews in the movie. You don't. First of all, there are Jews in the movie. All of the housekeepers in this house are Jewish slaves, basically. And so either Ben Shapiro hadn't seen the movie and just had been told that there weren't any Jews by someone else who couldn't tell who the Jewish people in the film actually are, or he did watch it himself and he, as a Jewish person, allegedly, couldn't tell who the actual Jews were, which is even worse.
Right. But, and I mean, even beyond that, and I still haven't had time to watch it yet, but just knowing the premise of the film, You know, if he's talking about like Jews in concentration camps, there are no Jews in concentration camps shown in the movie. That's the fucking point of the movie. Like, the whole point of the movie is that, you know, it's so easy for the people, for the oppressors, to completely compartmentalize and create their own little slice of paradise in this area of just heinous atrocity that they themselves are committing. You know, they're able to compartmentalize that and sort of, you know, ignore that, as long as they can, you know, live in their little kind of, you know, false reality that they've created for themselves.
Yeah.
You know,
and there's some, you know, really other haunting things, like, you know, every few days, you know, one of the servants brings in a box of like jewelry for the wife,
yeah,
and like a fur coat. And it's like, they never say, oh, here's the box of jewelry right, we took, you know, from the dead people. You just, like, you know where it's from. And she's like, you know, twirling in this new fur coat she has and looking at herself in the mirror. And you're just like, that's, you know, if you show the person where the coat came from, it would not have the impact that it does, where you only show the coat and the jewelry, and you just let the audience understand that, like, this is how they get comfortable with it, is they're benefiting from it in all these different ways,
right,
you know, so it's okay.
It's just a blatant indictment on, you know, the way that a kind of capitalistic pursuit like that will just completely blind you to the atrocities that you're taking part in. Cause it's like, well, all right, well, you know, I'm kind of taken care of, so I guess it's, yeah, not that bad.
I mean, the audio in this film is amazing. I watched an interview with the guy who did the sound design in it, and you know, basically, like, every sound that you would normally like try to get rid of in a movie is like the thesis of what this film is. Every little thing, you know, just like, you know, when you hear somebody walk up, you know, stairs, and the camera's still downstairs, but you can still hear them walking on the floor upstairs. That's not a thing that you would normally have in a movie.
Right.
Right. But like, you, the first 3 minutes of the movie is just a blank screen, and you just hear sound. Like, it's the movie is letting you know that you're going to have to use your fucking ears and your fucking brain, Ben Shapiro.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, the subtlety of that, I'm sure, is completely lost on him. He'd be like, whose coat is that? Where'd they get that coat from?
That's a nice coat. I should get one like that for my wife.
Yeah, sure. I gave him too deep of a voice. So, by the way, it did win Best Sound Design and Best International Film at the Oscars. I believe that came up during the International Film Award acceptance. But yeah, it's wild. Just, you know, we talk all the time on the show about the sort of Overton window and how it gets moved, and how something, you know, for sure, like a good statement, but not in any way a radical statement that was made, just came across as so insanely controversial, which, you know, it just proves that if you need to argue that hard against somebody making like a fairly benign criticism of the genocide that you're supporting, you've probably lost the plot, and you're probably in damage control mode, because I just can't imagine, like, what, you know, what would have been said if he said anything even remotely, you know, hardcore threatening to them, considering how they reacted to that.
I remember, you know, you remember how liberal Hollywood treated Michael Moore when he said a mean thing about George Bush?
Oh God, they boot him out. They boot him off the stage. I mean, yeah, it was fucking insane.
This is the liberal Hollywood. So yeah, there was a letter of condemnation that was signed by something like 1,000 Jewish professionals, you know, Hollywood professionals. And somebody like looked at the list and said, like, you know, this list of professionals includes a guy who writes about one film review a month on a WordPress blog. So, like, yeah, okay, professionals is stretching it quite a bit.
Yeah, no, it's doing a lot of heavy lifting. Yeah, so, you know, that I feel like it's going to be interesting to see how much trouble he has in the future, getting his films picked up by studios, but you know, good on him.
There was a bunch of people that signed a counter letter saying we totally support.
That is true. Yep.
And they were actually people that were like talented actors.
Yeah. So no, I mean, right. Of course. Well, you know, I think his fellow creatives would support him. I just worry about, his ability to get his movies distributed in the future, but I guess
I wouldn't worry about that. I mean, once you got an Oscar under your belt,
in 13 years when he decides to make another one,
right? You know, his catalog of films stretched out over a career of like four projects,
right, over like 20 years. So it's crazy, but no, yeah, good on him for standing up. So obviously, you know, Israel's in the news. As it is always, but before we talk about that, I want to talk about something a lot more joyous and happy and amazing. Because for those that have been living under a rock, O.J. Simpson did tragically pass away last week, of pancreatic cancer. So unfortunately, the funding for the search for the real killers of Nicole and Ron Goldman is probably going to cease now, because I can't imagine.
I feel like OJ found the real killer and brought him to justice. Right?
Yeah. How bad is cancer really? I mean, it did bring justice finally to the real killer. So, I mean, how bad is it really?
You saw that meme I shared with you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The cancer and OJ, and it was like reversed. Where
right on Ron, yeah, Nicole's face was OJ, Nicole, and then cancer was on, yeah. Yeah, so, you know, that motherfucker finally croaked. You know, there's really no justice in it, though. Like, I'm glad he's dead, but, you know, he lived most of his life in fucking luxury.
He never had to pay the money for the civil suit.
He never,
that's what people don't understand. It's like, you can sue somebody for all the money in the world, and even if they have it, there's nothing to force them to give you the money.
No, they could just dodge you until they fucking die, and then hide their money in trusts.
Right. The only thing you can do is wage garnishment, and that's only if they're like working a 9-to-5 job.
Right. If they're filing a W-2.
Right. So, like, there's no mechanism. You know, they got awarded something like $12 million in the wrong.
I think it was. Suit. I think it was 30, and yeah, they said they haven't even seen like $100,000. Like, they got the initial, like, legal payments that he had to pay or something, and that was like the only money they've ever seen from him. Right. And it's so funny, because, you know, and you're, I think, in the process of rewatching it now, but there's just the incredible true crime documentary, for my money the best American true crime documentary, at least that I've ever seen, OJ Made in America. It was part of like ESPN's 30 for 30 series, which is when they just do like a long form documentary on like a sports figure. It doesn't have to necessarily be like a sporting event, but like just somebody who was famous because of sports and something newsworthy that happened about them. And
is that why OJ was famous?
well, initially, yeah, sure. I mean, I thought he was the guy from The Naked Gun. I didn't know he played football. But
I was about like 13 when I found that out. I was like, oh, he was a football player? Like,
yeah, right. You just knew him from fucking. Yeah, no, I'm a big Capricorn 1 head. That's what I knew OJ Simpson from. I'd seen Capricorn 1 like 15 times. And
I started watching the OJ documentary last night, and I didn't watch it before because I thought I already had watched it. And so I started it, and I'm like, oh, yeah, no, I haven't watched this. This is like, you know, each episode is an hour and a half, and it's like, how many episodes? Five or six?
It's five episodes, and it's incredible. It's a each one is like a mini movie, and like, as I was mentioning to you before we went on air, like, the first one's good, but it's probably the least, you know, must-see of all of them, because it's really mostly focusing on his sports career. The one funny thing about the first one is that it proves that he's just never cared about his blackness whatsoever, and has done everything in his power to, like, be accepted by white people as, oh, well, he's one of the good ones. Like, that's always been his.
Oh, yeah. No, he was definitely like the Will Smith of sports. They make that very clear.
Right.
And that's what I love about it, is that they really build up the context of who this motherfucker was.
Right.
You know, and how he only cared about himself, how he was possessive. And I love, I don't know, it's the second one where they get into, you know, all the
LA
riots, like, and the causes of that. Stuff, yeah. Yeah. And it was, they go into so much depth about the LA riots that I literally forgot I was watching an OJ Simpson documentary.
Right. It doesn't appear for like 40 minutes in that episode. Right. It's amazing.
And they spend so much time on it and showing you like all the stuff going on, and then it's juxtaposed with like cutting back to him at some fucking like awards banquet, like not giving a shit. It could not be more like, you know, Peter Davis's Hearts and Minds of like juxtaposing, you know, how comfortable Americans at home lives were versus like the lives of the Vietnamese people while they're being napalmed to death.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's super critical that they do that in that second episode, because once you get to the trial, which is, I believe, second to last one, so much of it focuses on Mark Furman and the LAPD and their just general misconduct, you know, in the investigation, but just leading up to the investigation. I think they want to just put you in the headspace of a jury, you know, who miraculously and, you know, obviously one of the most famous, you know, boneheaded fucking court decisions of all time found him not guilty. But I think the movie, while obviously recognizing that he did did that shit, is trying to give you a sense of like how easy it was to manipulate a jury into at least some level of reasonable doubt, mm-hmm. you know, based on just the general fucking atrocities committed by the LAPD in the lead up to this.
Right. And we, back when I first started this fucking podcast, not started when we reviewed the OJ series, it was on Netflix. What was the name of that?
People versus OJ. The FX series, and it was on Netflix. I want to rewatch soon, actually.
Gives you such a great look at like how sequestered that jury was and how there was so much evidence that was not admitted that they, you know, all came out of that and then found out all the things that they weren't allowed to know, and they were like, holy shit, I would have completely found him guilty if I was allowed to know this and this and this.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, I think the ESPN doc that you rewatched and I have started to watch definitely does they go to great lengths to provide the context that lesser documentaries wouldn't bother with. You know, it would be just the trial.
And it's amazing because it's so funny. Like, and this is mild spoiler, I guess, for the last episode of it, but obviously the last episode is post-trial, and it really focuses a lot on his 2007 arrest, where he fucking took a bunch of guys and like held up a sports memorabilia dealer to try to steal back some of his like, in his mind, stolen merchandise from his, you know, from his football career, which he actually did go to jail for.
They kidnapped somebody.
He was
holding them at gunpoint for hours, like waiting for someone else to go get the stuff that he wanted in a hotel.
Right. Like, and it's just funny because you find out and like basically the reason that his stuff was not in his possession anymore is because he had his agent at the time take it all and fucking hide it after he lost the civil suit. He's like, oh, well, I'm not going to let them try to, you know, sell my memorabilia, sell my Heisman trophy, sell all of this, you know, this memorabilia of mine for my football career that's worth a lot of money. You know, he could have just fucking sold that stuff and like paid off the judgment that he rightfully lost, but he had his agent like try to stash it places, and I think he ended up stashing it in a storage locker that got abandoned and fucking bought by some, you know, like a, you know, a bidder or whatever, and like the fucking like Storage Wars type guy. And that's how his shit got into circulation. It wasn't stolen from him at all. It just was fucking, you know, him once again trying to evade justice.
He couldn't pay his fucking storage locker tab.
I don't even think he opened the lock. I think like he had his guy do it while he was trying to have, and like it.
No, I'm just I'm saying he was too much of a cheapskate to like.
Oh no, I'm right. No, it's just it's just him constantly just trying to avoid justice. It's just amazing that it eventually did catch up with him. But again, it's a cold comfort to the actual victims of his fucking crimes because, I mean, the guy served, you know, like 10 years, not even 7 years.
It was like
in jail.
5-6 years for that.
It wasn't much. It wasn't much at all. He made parole pretty easily because he was a model, you know, inmate. But he, you know, served a short jail sentence for detaining somebody with a gun in a hotel room. And the rest of his life lived in, you know, multimillionaire fucking luxury.
Lived at the golf course.
Parts of California, yeah.
Yeah.
Or Florida, you know, I think where he moved
I thought he was living in Vegas, but I could be wrong.
Oh, no, you're right. He did move to Vegas, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean,
or
he
don't
was
fucking allow any freak show wherever, to fucking, you know,
right. Wherever he went, people wanted his autograph because it's just like, even though they knew that he was a murderer, they were like, well, he's not going to murder me, and I still like want to get OJ's autograph because it's fucking, it's like the right. most famous murderer in the world, and he's just walking around free playing golf, commenting on Twitter. Oh man, yeah. They need to like preserve his Twitter account in perpetuity.
I can't fuck about it. Some of the shit he posted, just either the lack of self awareness or like the rubbing it in is just.
When he would comment on like other people's criminal convictions,
like other football players, like you're not a good example for the black community. Like, are you fucking kidding me right now, bro? Like,
I mean, I've cut off some heads, but what that guy did, like he would do that. Oh, he was like cheeky about it. That's why people followed him and were like, this. I can't believe this. You know, most famous athlete in the world for a while turned. You know,
most famous fucking double murderer. Yeah, you know.
Just. You know, and that's the thing that made that story. I want to talk a little bit about like, you know, our memories of like when that shit went down at the time. You know, not sort of distilled through documentaries or reenactments right. with David Schwimmer. You know, it was
juice. You're killing me, juice.
Somebody did a compilation just every time.
Every time he says juice.
Every time David Schwimmer says juice in that show, and just like cut it all together. It's like 2 minutes long of just David Schwimmer's juice, 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 juice. But you know, it's like the Waco thing, like these things that happened in the 90s where you're just like, where were you when this happened? You know,
right.
like this like defined the media landscape for so many different things. But the thing with OJ was, you know, you had, it's like the perfect trifecta of a news story. There's got to be violence, right? So we had that. There's got to be celebrity. We had that. And, oh, we've got sports, too? Like, every fucking new... Everybody's going to cover this. Nobody's not going to cover this in some way. It's the biggest fucking story of the century type story. You know, Waco was a huge story, but, like, it didn't have any celebrity. I mean, David Koresh kind of became a celebrity, but nobody knew who he was at the time.
And it was also sort of slow developing. I mean, it took, you know, like I think a couple months or like over a month at least to like to the standoff itself.
Like 45 days, yeah.
Like the first couple days were like, holy shit. And then it was like, oh, well, another day in the standoff. And then the last couple day was like, oh, fuck. Like, you know, it was very like, you know, beginning and ending heavy.
Whoops. Yeah, we just murdered, you know, dozens of children. Oopsie. Yeah. But then there was the, you know, like the idea of like, you know, the news, you know, having a 24-hour news cycle was still kind of new, you know, like not everybody had cable, but like there was CNN. It wasn't like now where there's, you know, a million 24-hour news networks and nobody watches anything on it because there's nothing worth having a 24-hour news station for. But, you know, the idea of having news helicopters, you know, filming, you know, a live high-speed chase and running that across the nation was also a new thing. So then, you know, when you have the Bronco fleeing the police, you know, at like 25 miles an hour, and it's being broadcast live all over the fucking country, and it's like, oh my God, O.J. Simpson is in that car and he's fleeing the police and he's wanted for fucking murder. Like, everybody was fucking tuned into that shit. Everyone. Like, there'd never been anything quite like that before. And then everybody, you know, all the people on the highway, like, cheering for him and shit. Like, it was a huge fucking spectacle.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, I just... What a fucking time. I have to imagine, like, in the internet age, it wouldn't have been quite like that. But there was just, like, so little to fucking do, even, like, as far as like, recently as 1994, that it was, like...
Yeah. I mean, the internet really didn't ramp up till 95. And then, you know, the idea of like live video on the internet didn't really exist until like, you know, the early 2000s, I think. But
yeah, it just wasn't a thing. You know, there was still just like, you know, you still kind of had like your basic, you know, cable channels and not much else going on. So it's something like that's on and you're looking and it's like, oh, fuck, that's the highway I drive to work on every day. Let me go run to the fucking overpass and, you know, make a fucking, you know, run OJ run site. Like just wild shit. God.
So I had a couple tweets here, some funny tweets from people that are not me about OJ. They're not like really, really funny because I've been focused mostly on the Israel stuff. So I found a few, though. But this guy tweets out, OJ Simpson finally brought the killer to justice. I guess I kind of stole that one earlier. Now that OJ Simpson is dead, get ready for the woke police to dig into his past and find out something shady he did.
That's a good one. That's good.
You know, remember when David Bowie died, right? Uh-huh. And then the woke police did that. And we're like, oh, he was a fucking rapist. And it was like, David Bowie, what? Like, yeah, when he was 21, he had sex with an 18-year-old. I'm like,
okay.
Like, do you remember being that age? Because that's like, yeah, okay. OJ Simpson died on the same day Ford issued a recall on the Bronco. That's an actual real thing.
True. Happened. Yes. No. I
real thing. Oh my God. Not the
it's
year.
It's so funny. It's so funny they brought the Bronco back because it was such an iconic, you know, truck for so long for them. But they took like pains to make it like as not. It's like as distinct as possible, so it looked nothing like the Bronco from the 90s. Like it had no, you know, like typically when they bring a car back, they'll try to like throw in some design aesthetics that like harken to the old one, but just like, oh, here's a modern version. They were like, well, you know, there's a little bit of icon, like it's not the brand you want to associate your car with necessarily. Like it was like, well, it's an iconic brand from, you know, the 70s and whatever, but
the thing is, you know that they would like to, if they could get away with it look exactly like it, if they thought it was going to be a selling point and it would work, they would do it.
They'd re-release a 94 fucking, or 90, whatever, 93 Bronco, like exterior with just modern, you know, gadgets inside in a heartbeat if they could, but the tact is not there for sure.
Oh man. And you know, they've done like focus groups on it.
Oh yeah.
You know
yeah.
they have done focus groups on that shit. Yeah. And the last one here, OJ Simpson won't see your little jokes, but your mutuals who have murdered their wife and her little friend will. So keep that in mind.
Oh, man. What a piece of shit. Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
Rest in peace, Juice. So speaking of pieces of shit, let's talk about what atrocities Israel's committed since the last time we talked, because I think there have been quite a few.
Yeah, well, there's no more hospitals, there's no more universities.
That's like important, or
yeah. But I love how you mentioned how you know, Israel's back in the news, or has been in the news.
Yeah, it hasn't left the news.
I mean, but here I went to Yahoo News today just to kind of, you know, see, kind of read the room, see what kind of propaganda is being put out. Nothing. Mainstream media gets aggregated on Yahoo News, you know, from all sorts of different sources, you know. Not a single mention of Israel or Palestine or the campus encampments currently happening in the United States right now. Not a single thing. It's like they want it to just not, like, nobody think about it. It's election year. We're just going to pretend it's not happening.
It's so weird because, like, and maybe that's like our echo chamber that we're in, because I'm like, oh, I see news about it all the time, but that's only on Twitter, and that's only because we follow people who actually, you know, keep up with that news or post that news or, you know, contribute to that news. The regular people, like you know, people like your mom, like, they probably don't see any of this shit. Any of these atrocities that Israel's committed, unless it's so like brazen, like when they fucking bombed like the fucking, you know, the food fucking aid workers, like when they killed the six aid workers, like that was too brazen to not make the mainstream news.
The aid workers were like actually intelligence agents undercover. So that was what it was a bridge too far. Was those guys were MI6 that you killed, who we had embedded with those aid workers. So yeah, and just yesterday. The U.S. Senate approved a $95 billion aid package for Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan. I wonder what those three countries have in common.
They're fighting the communist menace? I'm not sure.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, still, I love that, like, we're funding totally contradictory things.
Yeah.
You know, like we're funding Ukraine because Russia invaded them, but we're funding Israel because Israel is invading Palestine.
Right.
So it's totally arbitrary. I mean, it's not arbitrary. It's like
whoever lets us, you know, fucking continue right. our imperialistic ways in
apparently
regions of the world.
There's people in the U.S. State Department who they track where the money actually goes to. I mean, that's, you know, State Department intelligence is almost the same thing. And there's certain different divisions within the IOF that have been, you know, the State Department is tracking and is aware of which groups are committing which atrocities, right? And certain ones can be banned from receiving U.S. aid if they're, you know, found to be just wantonly slaughtering civilians. And they know which groups. There's an ultra-Orthodox little division of the IOF. The State Department does not want more money going to, but Blinken has the final say on it. And he's so far is saying, no, they're going to keep getting money. We're not going to do that. That's only for other countries. Do we care about that? So it's just like, I mean, and this is, you know, all the people in the State Department who have been resigning in protest, but it's like, you know, that never gets reported on. So how much impact does that really have? I mean, right. Professionally, I'm sure that has some impact with their colleagues who haven't resigned, but still, but it's just, it's so wild to me. And it's not wild. It's like actually what you'd expect, but the military aid that we're giving Israel, they're using to block U.S. food aid to Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, we think that we can just keep doing the genocide, but like, we'll give them some food aid. And Israel's like, no, we're not going to let you give them the food aid. We're going to use your military shit to prevent the food coming in because we are committing a genocide.
They're completely off the fucking leash. They're completely just the wild dog that was let off the leash. And Biden is so out of his depth in trying to control them. And to the point where I almost do believe that he genuinely is frustrated by Netanyahu, but like, he's so fucking feckless when it comes to actually pushing back on a right wing strongman that it's like, you've reaped what you've sown. Like this is your fucking entire career in politics has led up to this moment where you've always capitulated to the rightmost point of view of your party on every issue. And you've backed yourself into a corner where you've basically gotten us, you know, on the brink of a fucking world war because you just are incapable of, you know, rising to the moment and actually, you know, standing these fucking maniacs down. Like that's, I genuinely think that that's where he's at this point. And also, yeah, you know, completely losing his mental faculties, well, which doesn't help, but
he likens these, you know, it started at, what was it? Columbia University.
Yep.
Right. And then it spread to, Emory in Atlanta, USC in California. I forget the name of the school, but it's in Dallas, right? We just saw the National Guard.
I think it was UT. I think it was University of Texas, I believe.
Oh yeah, UT Austin. Yeah, UT.
Oh
Austin.
Yeah, UT Austin. Yeah,
UT something. So just yesterday, there's a video of the National Guard coming in and beating the shit out of everybody, and they were beating the shit out of out of protesters at their encampment at USC yesterday, and I posted I quote tweeted something about it and said, this is Biden's America. This is Biden's America now. And somebody replied and said, no, this is Greg Abbott's Texas. And I was like, she said that like only a governor can deploy the National Guard. And I was like, that's not fucking true. Who do you think that sent the National Guard to fucking Iraq? Right. That was the president. Right.
They understand the concept of like the National Guard.
Right. Well, so it's the National Guards are dually controlled by governors and the president of the United States. Right. For them to all be busting heads on these campus encampments all on the same day, that takes national coordination, right? That's what Department of Homeland Security does, is they coordinate local law enforcement across a national level, right? That's what they do. And the Department of Homeland Security falls under the Justice Department, which falls under the U.S. Attorney General, who is appointed and reports directly to Joe Biden.
Yeah.
so
he's certainly at least okay with the idea that they're doing this, whether or not he's, you know,
well, he called them terrorists,
ordering it or not. Yeah.
He likened these student protesters to terrorists and called them anti-Semitic. despite the fact that most of these encampments are being organized by Jewish Voice for Peace, which is a national, well, international organization that I've worked with personally before. Great people, great Jews. And
it's a very inconvenient organization for that to exist. For,
right. So they were having, I forget what the name of the service is, but it's something to do with Passover, but they were like having these Passover public events at these encampments. Seder in the street. Yeah. Naomi Klein gave a long speech at one of them that was on Democracy Now! Yesterday. And immediately police are coming in, cracking the heads, you know, beating the shit out of people. If you don't, there was something like 300 people were arrested outside of Chuck Schumer's house in Brooklyn. 300 people arrested. Imagine how many people were actually there.
Right.
If there was 300 people arrested, because that's the most that you can arrest at any kind of thing like that, because it takes time to book everybody. And that takes manpower. It means they can't
storing
them,
like physically storing them in a place.
I was arrested at a protest and they wanted to talk to me and they, you know, say never talk to the police. But I was like, all right, I'll do a little quid pro quo because I have some questions about their operation that I bet they'll be too dumb not to admit to, because these were just like low level fucking street cops. Right. And I was cuffed the whole time. I was cuffed for like 4 or 5 hours that night. It sucked. You know, I said, well, how come, you know, 8 of the people you arrested were all photographers? And they're like, well, because we wanted to confiscate your cameras and look at all the photos you took. I'm like, well, at least you're honest about that. And they actually deleted a bunch of photos off my camera when I finally got it back 3 days later. That was nice.
Seems like it'd be some sort of federal crime, but whatever.
And I said, well, why did you kettle everybody, but then only arrest 10 people? And they said, well, we didn't have enough people on shift to process more than 10. So we figured if we arrested 10 people, it would scare the rest of you enough to go home. And it did. And I was like, man, this is a really great flow of information back and forth. This is amazing.
I appreciate this dialogue, I got to say.
Right. Well, I mean, but the thing was, they admitted that they were just going to drop the charges against this. Like, they weren't going to do anything with it. So that's why I kind of felt safe to actually, like, talk to them a little bit. Because right. I knew I wasn't, they weren't going to, they were going to.
And charges, you know, like that can't stick any. I mean, like, what, you know, like. No.
So, I, you know, we all went to court a couple days later and the judge vacated it. And then we all went home and then, you know, some reporters wanted to talk about it. So I was like, all right, whatever. But it was, you know, I was just like, you know, they say never talk to cops, but it's like, yeah, that's if you're really being charged with a crime.
No, right. Yeah, no, shut the fuck up until your lawyer shows up in that case. But
like. Right, right. But yeah, it was a really eye-opening kind of thing, because I was like, they really wanted to like learn more about, you know, what exactly I had photographed. And I'm sure that they wanted to just, you know, go through photos that I'd taken, and it wasn't on my phone, so they didn't have to like get a warrant to unlock my phone or anything. It was just like a regular camera they could turn on and do whatever the fuck they wanted with. They wanted access to their photographers. They admitted it, right? So,
right.
So yeah, where was I? So yeah, they're busting heads. They're breaking down these encampments, and somebody on Twitter today is like, I don't understand. Why don't the police just leave them alone? They're just kids sitting on a lawn with some tents. What's the threat? And I'm like, motherfucker, learn the history of sit-down strikes and encampments. Learn about the DC Bonus Army. Learn about the Flint sit-down strikes. Learn about why these things are a threat. They don't care about a protest that lasts an hour and then everyone goes home. They care about somebody who's going to hold space, right? Who's going to not leave that space. Right. That's going to make it an issue to the point where, you know, the university has to divest from Israel, right? And then they, I mean, you know, a bunch of kids sitting on a fucking, you know, grassy lawn in the middle of a campus is how revolutions start. And the police know that. They know if people feel, you know, why, you know, when fucking Nazi Germany invaded and occupied France, first thing they did was, you know, they banned public gatherings of more than 3 people. Right? Because they know when people start getting together and they know each other and they start organizing, that's the only real threat to power.
Right. Right. Well, speaking of threats to power, I think the real tragedy that we should mention, though, this week is people losing their credentials and their access to specific buildings on campus at New York University.
Oh, no.
That's the real travesty.
Yeah. Okay, so what's this guy's name? How do you say his name?
I think it's Shai David Davidai? I don't know.
So it's spelled S-H-A-I-D-A-V-I-D-A-I. So I thought it was like Shy David Die.
that's a good
and when you see the way this adult behaves, you will wish that he would die, because he's just the most obnoxious real life troll that you've ever heard, and it's alarming how much the way this guy acts. You see this replicated in the way that settlers will treat Palestinians in the West Bank.
It's just the entitlement and
just, you know, screaming at the top of your lungs at somebody who's just calmly standing in front of you.
Victim complex as you're the aggressor. It's
people doing the genocide acting as though they're the victim. This is exactly completely embodied in this guy. And he's from Israel. He's an Israeli, soon to be probably not professor anymore at Columbia, as we're going to hear here.
Israel by way of New York, by way of Israel, probably. But yeah. Mm. So just to set this up, this clip that we're going to play, he is just like a known psychopath who would just stalk protests and take photos of the protesters, presumably to try to forward them to the NYPD to get people arrested for protesting.
Oh, yeah.
And people have known this about him, so they've he's been popping up at a lot of these events and encampments, and he's just increasingly becoming the crazy man that's shouting at everyone who's peacefully protesting. And he, like you said, he is a professor at Columbia, and he's so psychotic and disruptive that they've basically limited his access on campus to the building that he teaches in, and, you know, restricted his access to the other different areas of the campus that he has no business in, because they realize he's such a threat to people's safety, or, you know, a threat to public safety at the very least.
Well, and I'm sure they notified him of this ahead of time, but clip, he tries to pretend as though he didn't know, and he's trying to make this huge, like, spectacle for the cameras out of what happens to him or what happened to him.
You know he got an email about this, but
he tries to pretend like he didn't know, like this was just suddenly like a shock to him in this clip here.
Right.
Heart has been deactivated. Why?
Can you back up, please?
Uh-huh. Wait. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Everybody, my card has been deactivated. This is Cass Holloway, the COO. This is Gerald Lewis. They were in the meeting where I asked them if Hamas is a terror organization.
Hang on.
What happened there?
I don't know. Is it sound really weird on your end too?
No, it was playing fine, and it just faded out. Like,
yeah, I faded out. It was like, I don't know, it was weirdly clipping on my end. I'll hear. Attempt two.
Hang on. All right.
Heart has been deactivated. Yeah. Why?
Can you back up, please?
Uh huh.
Wait. Everybody, my card has been deactivated. This is Cass Holloway, the COO. This is Gerald Lewis. They were in the meeting where I asked them if Hamas is a terror organization, and they couldn't say that it is a terrorist organization. What? I'm a professor. Why can't I?
Shy,
speak out loud so the media.
Shy, we are willing to take you to the math lawn.
No, I am a professor here.
We are alumnus. We have a
real statement. Whoa, everybody quiet. I am a professor here. I have every right to be everywhere on campus. You cannot let people that support Hamas on campus and me, a professor, not go on campus. Let me in now.
Let us in.
No.
Let's try.
A professor, go on. We got the COO of Columbia University, Mr. Cass Holloway. Wait, no. They have deactivated. They have deactivated my card. They are not letting me on campus because.
I have not just a civil right
as a Jewish person to be on campus. I have a right as a professor employed by the university to be on campus. They deactivated my card. These are 5 lawsuits in happening, but we don't want to sue. We just want to be Jewish in public.
Oh my God.
This is insufferable. Just unbelievably inside. What a fucking.
And his word choice there is very telling. He has a civil right as a Jewish citizen. What does that even mean?
It's a great question.
But it goes back to Zionism. You know, he in his bio on Twitter, he calls himself a proud Zionist. And what does Zionists believe? That they are fundamentally superior to regular humans. That they are chosen by God, that they are, you know, through their religion or genetically, they are superior, right? And any supremacist movement is dangerous. Because once you think that you are superior to other human beings, you will start to dehumanize them.
You will act on that belief. Like your actions will reflect that. And if you have power or, you know, military support, you will enact that, you know, by force, by killing, you know, mass amounts of the people that you believe superior to.
What did the Nazis believe? That they were superior to the people that they were gas chambering.
Right.
Right. And it's
like the only thing that allows a human being to kill somebody so grotesquely and in such mass volumes is that you have to think of them as not a human, and that's the only way.
What did that Israeli parliament guy say that, you know, what we're doing to Gaza would be genocide if we were doing it to people, but we're doing it to animals?
Yeah, imagine saying that shit. Like it's incredible. It's incredible. I don't know how these people fucking sleep at night, but I...
Well, they sleep at night knowing that we're going to give them infinite money forever, no matter what they do.
Yeah, no, there's going to be no consequences whatsoever. So, I mean, you know,
the United States Senate, you know, passing $95 million for Ukraine, Taiwan, and Israel, you know, like what we're giving to Israel is the jewelry in the fur coat for them to feel okay about what they're doing.
No, absolutely.
It's no fucking different. And, you know, at least Germany, after they did all that shit, was like, oh yeah, we did a bad thing. We realized what we did, and now we're going to, like, you know, enshrine that into our constitution that we can never do that again. And displaying the swastika or, you know, any of that is, like, illegal now. Right. Right? Which, I mean, it's like imagine if we had those kind of standards in this country or had them for Ukraine, how different things would be.
That would be nice. But no, we'll send them all the fucking money in the world.
So we had an encampment pop up today in Chicago. I was kind of hoping that, you know, UIC would get on the ball. They're kind of like the more radical school here. I've actually gone down to some of their things. They blocked off the street in front of Obama's house one time. The police got so fucking mad.
Oh man.
And they started like this, like students at UIC. And they had a little mini encampment for about 3 days blocking off the street, and Obama wasn't home, but it's like the street's already kind of already blocked off just because it's
right. They don't want people hanging around Obama's house regardless of whether he's right there or not.
So they've got huge jersey barriers on the street. So it's effectively a cul-de-sac, right? So these kids like strung up like a yarn from all the trees. So like the cops couldn't like run through it without having to get caught through yarn. And the cops, of course, got up right up close as close as they could to be intimidating. Yeah, that was a fun night. But so Northwestern University, all the way up on the other top of the city, not even really in Chicago, it's in Evanston. They started an encampment today. And police were there within 5 minutes.
Oh, weird.
it's just like, sorry, kids, but protesting genocide is against the rules.
No, that shit they'll respond to in 5 minutes. You fucking have, you know, somebody like rob you or break in your house or something. I'm sure it would be, you know, 45 minutes to an hour before you start hearing fucking sirens.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, if at all. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You know, whenever they get around to it, fucking ridiculous. But. Oh shit. All right. So
yeah, I wish it was, I mean, I wish that it was, they had something going on downtown or like maybe in my neighborhood, but it's, you know, all of our universities are like way on the edge of the city, unfortunately. Well, there's the art school downtown, but that's like right downtown. So I don't know where you would put an encampment. But yeah, I'm not going to be biking all the way up to Evanston anytime soon to check it out. So I'm going to be watching very closely, on the Twitter interwebs to, see how things develop.
Yeah. See if anything pops up. Yeah. All right. So, I mean, I think that pretty much covers what we needed to cover this week. You have anything else on Israel for today, or are we good?
No, that was pretty much it. I you know, we haven't been doing the show as regularly, so I have not been keeping as regular of notes, but I did have a few things in the chamber for this week. So, yeah, I guess hopefully, maybe by the next time we record, this will all be wrapped up and we'll have some better news for you.
Yeah,
I forgot my joke. I forgot to tell my fucking joke at the start of the show.
Okay.
I was going to comment on how long it's been since we recorded and how I was starting to feel like the Krasenstein brothers, the Krasenstein twins. Remember their podcast?
Yeah.
That lasted for only like 6 months.
And didn't they have, like, am I misremembering, or weren't they like 10 minute episodes? There was some like absurdly
Right. That was the thing, is like they could hold each other's penises in the womb, but they couldn't hold a conversation for more than 20 minutes.
Oh man, just fucking unreal. We could fucking, you know, hold a conversation in our sleep, rolling out of a dead sleep with no topics probably for a fucking hour and a half if we needed to.
Yeah, well, I remember when you first like auditioned me and you were just like, let's just chat and see how it goes. And we talked for like 3 hours with no topics, no news. It was just us fucking shooting the shit.
Right.
And yeah.
That's why I had no life. I actually could spend 3 hours. Oh my God. Three hours. What's that like?
I mean, I've always got the time. But yeah, I understand your work schedule prohibits that a little bit these days. So hopefully we can do another show soon, though.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. For sure. All right. So yeah, I think that does it for us this week. If you want to support the show, rate, review, subscribe, all that fun stuff. Follow us on Acast. You can find the link to our show at our Twitter account or my Twitter account, move/_left. And your Twitter?
Oh, sorry.
You're good. Sorry. No, I skipped a bunch.
We're both
of
a little
shit.
Rusty.
We're rusty.
I thought you were going to say the name of our Twitter account, which is
I forget what is it, Move Left Pod, I think
it's just Move Left Pod. Minute since I've been on there, and yeah, as always, I am on Twitter at Bike Slutty.
So, and by the way, our account to the direct page is shows.acast.com/move left. I looked it up because I'm tired of not remembering what the fuck the address is. That's actually pretty easy to remember too, I gotta say. I'm gonna put
the link to the thing that you're already listening to is this.
right. Yeah, no, if you need to find us, because obviously you've had trouble, that's where we're at. And yeah, we'll see you next time.